it is gone. A two-run home run for Rhys Hoskins into the second deck for Bryce Harper. Wait a miss, he got him. And Aaron Nola leads two. Segura on the run, reaches up and makes the grab.
Swing and a miss, struck him out.
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 306. I'm John Stolness from SB Nation's Phillies blog, The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter, at John Stolness. Coming up, we have a big show here. We're going to talk about the Phillies-Braves series that just wrapped up. What a fun one that was, huh, guys? We're going to talk about trade season, what it means for the Phillies' trade deadline motivations and what moves they could make here over the next few days, and I want to talk about the coaching and the general manager, and, you know, it's just going to be all kinds of fun because there's just nothing but fun coming out of Phillies land. And joining me to jump in the big plastic balls in the big pit of Phillies fandom that we are all swimming around in right now is
to weep alone somewhere in the corner.
Right. That's right. Is Liz Rocher, fantastic sports writer for Yahoo Sports. You can follow her on Twitter at Liz Rocher. Hello, Liz. How are you? Did you get your fill of the Phillies this weekend?
No, I want more.
Yeah, I can understand that. I can understand.
I mean, what sane person wouldn't say that out loud?
Yeah, it was what a dynamic series of at the ballpark this weekend the Phillies and Braves put on. And
they had a chance. They had a chance to stomp all the Braves' throat and make a statement. And they're like, nah, I think we're good. Nah.
Man, it was so disheartening, and we're going to get into it here more in just a couple of minutes. Justin Clue, who is normally with us on Sunday nights, is unable to join us tonight, but make sure you check out the Dirty Inning bonus episode that we just put up on the timeline on the Good Fight podcast feed, because it's got a show that he and Trev did with the Saturday Night Special uniforms. I think they recorded it last year, and the Phillies, of course, wore the Saturday Night Specials on Saturday
again.
Night. The all burgundies were not. Look, the only person who pulled it off was Andrew McCutchen.
Oh, I thought they looked fantastic. I thought, first off, Andrew McCutchen should be everyone's favorite Philly, if only for many, many reasons, but also because he has nothing to do with what's happening on the field right now.
No, exactly.
But I thought everybody looked pretty good. I thought they were cool looking, and I'm sad we're never going to see them again because the patterns, the designs, and all evidence that they ever existed is going to be burned.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because the two times they've worn them, I like them too, the way they look. But yeah, that's what I was referring to. The two times they've worn them, they've gotten absolutely destroyed. First back in 1979 and on Saturday night against the Braves. And, you know, this series against Atlanta, we're going to jump into that here in just a couple minutes. But it was obviously an unbelievably disappointing series. And I think it said a lot about where the Phillies are, where the Braves are right now. But frankly, more interesting than talking about the Phillies at the moment is talking about the trade deadline. And, you know, we can talk about the trade deadline and what it means for the Phillies, knowing that they lost 2 out of 3 to the Atlanta Braves. But as we look at the standings, the Phillies are tied with the Brewers 1 game back of the wild card teams. Right now, you've got 2 teams are tied for the lead in the NL Central. The Cardinals and the Cubs, which means they're also tied for that top wild card spot. So you've got the Cardinals and Cubs technically as the top wild card team. One of those 2 teams will win the division. One would win the wild card. The Nationals also have the same record as the Cardinals and the Cubs. They're all 56-49. The Phillies are 55-50. It's a dog pile right now in the National League wild card. The San Francisco Giants are kind of sniffing around the outside, but really the Phillies kind of are in the thick of it. And even though they lost 2 out of 3, they did win the series finale on Sunday, and that had players talking. Bryce Harper said, imploring, you know, the front office not to give up on the season. He said, we've just got to get in. That's it. That's all you've got to do. There are some wild card teams that have won it. Some teams that have won the division have won it. So we just got to get it. We have a great group of guys. We have to score runs, pitch well, and get our foot in the door. If we have a chance to do that, so hopefully if we do make a decision, it'll be based on us trying to win this year and next year and the year after that. Bryce Harper, not exactly a quote machine.
I don't know. I like that.
I
mean,
it's
not brilliant. He's
balanced.
A baseball player. He's not, you know, the best order of our time. But it's positive. It's realistic. It's not, we have a shot to do it all. It's all we have to do is make it to the playoffs, and then anything can happen. We just have to make the wild card. That's all we have to do. And I like that kind of thinking. It's realistic. It's grounded. But it's still, you know, he believes in his team. And I love that. I could get behind that, especially when it's just been like putridness everywhere.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, it's the National League right now is just an awful collection of mediocrity. When we talked about it last week, I think we were talking about it in the sense that, hey, there's lots of good teams battling it out, and it's interesting. And that is true. It is going to be interesting, this wild card chase. But, you know, right now it's a lot of mediocrity. You've got the Phillies and Brewers one game behind, as I mentioned just a minute ago. You've got San Francisco 2.5 games behind. The Arizona Diamondbacks 3.5 games behind. And then after that, everybody's at least 6 back. There's really, you know, it's those teams. It's whoever, you know, finishes second in the Central, whether it's the Cubs or the Cardinals, the Nationals, the Phillies, the Brewers. And I'm not buying the Giants at all.
No, but nor should you.
No, but the Diamondbacks are there. I believe more in the Diamondbacks than I do the Giants at the moment. But, you know, that's, you know, Aaron Nola said the same thing. He said, we've got a great group here. We're not out of it. We don't believe we're out of it by any means. Anything can happen. We can go on a great run. So I guess the question here is, how much does this series change your thinking about where the Phillies stand at the deadline, Liz? I mean, obviously the division is out of reach. I don't think any of us believes now 6.5 games behind the Braves, and you just see the chasm between these two teams. They're not catching Atlanta. So they need to just focus on the wild card at this point. And how hard do you go after a wild card spot? That's the question.
Well, this series didn't do anything to make me feel very confident.
No.
The Phillies can hit the ball. We know that, but they just can't pitch it so the other team can hit it. And that's the huge problem. And now, as we're going to talk about, Marcus Stroman is off the market.
Yeah, we're going to dive into that.
Very little, which is, if the Phillies could have had him for that little, everyone should be fired. Everyone on the Blue Jays and the Phillies. Everyone should be fired, because if the Blue Jays have let him go for so little, and the Phillies either didn't call or whatever it is. But that's just, it's criminal. Stroman is one of my favorite pitchers in all of baseball, and that he was available at the deadline and he went to the Mets is just a stinging indictment of how seriously I think the team, you know, the front office is taking all of this. Because that would be a big move.
Yeah.
But they're not, they obviously didn't want to make it or couldn't make it for whatever reason. So it didn't change my thinking much in that I don't think the Phillies are going to make a big move, nor do I think they should make a big move. Unless it's for someone who has, even 2 years of control right now isn't quite enough for me, considering what they're going to end up giving up for it.
Well, I mean, that's a good question. What are they going to give up for it? Because, as you mentioned, the Mets of all teams traded for Marcus Stroman. And it's good for the Phillies that the Mets are not going to challenge for a wild card this year. So one of the top pitchers on the trade market is not going to go to a team that will actually challenge the Phillies for one of those wild card spots this year. So that is good news for Philadelphia. But the Mets gave up their fourth best prospect, their best pitching prospect, and their fourth best prospect is a pitcher who is their best pitching prospect, and he's close to the majors, and their sixth best prospect for Stroman. And I saw in our Good Fight Slack channel, Matt Winkleman, who everybody who listens to this podcast knows Phillies prospects inside and out, compared it to basically the Phillies giving up Adonis Medina and Francisco Morales. And I talked with Jay Floyd a little bit about him on the last podcast about Francisco Morales, because I didn't know a whole lot about him, but he's pitching in low A, and he kind of alternates between starting and relieving. They're kind of easing him in, but he's got insane strikeout numbers, and he's elevated in the minds of the front office. But that's the kind of deal where we were talking about here. Adonis Medina and Francisco Morales for Marcus Stroman, something like that. That's what the Phillies would have had to at least offer or try to beat or something like that. And I think the Phillies probably could have made that offer, and they would have had Stroman for the stretch drive this year and for next year as well. And so, again, you're right. This does call into question what the Phillies are doing, what Matt Klintak is doing right now. There's obviously a reason the deal didn't go down, why the Phillies didn't get Marcus Stroman. Maybe they weren't willing to offer those two guys. They weren't willing to come down off of that kind of a deal, and they really don't want to give up any prospects to go for a wild card push this year, which makes you wonder what they're looking to do. I mean, they said earlier, Liz, that they would be willing to take on a pitcher in prospect cost, but not in prospect cost, but in monetary cost. But, you know, it's funny that, you know, they didn't go get Dallas Keuchel, who only would have cost them money. So if they're at the trade deadline here looking for potential starting pitchers that are mostly just going to cost them money, why didn't they go after the free agent starting pitcher that only cost them money?
I mean, the fact that they're willing to do it now, like the only guy, it feels like a plausible deniability in a way. The only guy who's on the market now who they could do that with is really Zach Greinke. And I don't think they're going to go out and get him. So, I mean, they're just saying that to prevent themselves from having to go out and do it.
I suppose that's true. And
that's just, it's a wild theory, but it's really,
I don't know why else
they'd be saying that. Because that should have been their theory the whole time. If they didn't want Dallas Keuchel, someone should have said, we're not interested. Take from that whatever you want, but we're moving on. They never said that. I really would love it if someone would just say, no, that's not in our plans. Full speed ahead towards failure for the rest of the season.
Well, it is interesting. Whatever their plan is, whatever the Phillies are planning here, I don't understand what it is. Maybe Justin Clue understands what the plan is. Justin has joined us here on the podcast just a couple minutes behind schedule. But, Justin, how you doing, pal?
Good. No, I have no idea what's going on. You can continue. It's exactly like I am not here. It does feel a lot like, and I've been thinking about this as the recent days have passed, that by announcing that they were planning on making no big moves at the trade deadline and watching the moves that have been made and the adjustments that good teams have made, it is sort of like it was saying we're not going to make any big moves, a synonym for we don't expect this team to make the playoffs. And I think maybe it was because, no, obviously Andy McPhail's never going to say that out loud. But I think that's about as close as you're going to get. Like, we don't trust this team to be good enough, even with adjustments we could make now, to make the playoffs. Because, you know, if this team, which somehow it's still plausible, fell ass backwards into a second wild card spot, went into the wild card game and lost the wild card game, we'd be listening to an Andy McPhail press conference next spring where he said, you know, this team made the playoffs last year. People forget that. This is a playoff team. Yeah. And he would keep saying that. And you wouldn't be able to deny it except by saying, hey, man, that's utter crap. I do think that the Phillies have, in essence, had less to say because they've essentially decided this team isn't going to be the team. Now, that's on top of the context that this team never has much to say in the first place. But I think at this point in time, that's why you didn't hear an explanation like that.
Were you surprised, Justin, that Marcus Stroman went to the Mets? And
a little bit.
Yeah. I said, you're going to have to bleep this. I really did say, what the f*** is happening? I thought my fiance was playing a joke on me because that was the last team I imagined he'd go to.
So now the Mets, it's saying that Syndergaard's going to be on the table moving forward?
Yeah. Noah Syndergaard or Chris Wheeler. Not Chris Wheeler. Goodness gracious. Yeah. Maybe Chris Wheeler's on the table. I don't know.
Why not at this
Why
point?
Why not? Who the hell cares?
Well, let me ask you this. I'm sure there's a very clear explanation for this that I'm just missing, but the Mets go out of their way to acquire Marcus Stroman and then go out of their way, theoretically, to deal Noah Syndergaard. What's going on?
Well, I think Wheeler and Syndergaard are both going to go here, you know? And
so why bring in Stroman?
They need to get, well, they want
to
have.
They need someone to
pitch.
They can compete next year.
Ah, I see.
They're just done with Syndergaard from what I can tell. They're just done. And Syndergaard hasn't been doing well. He needs a new atmosphere.
But don't the Mets logos on the front of their uniforms indicate that they will not be competing next year?
Like just the fact that they have Mets on their uniforms
already. That's already been decided.
That's been the baseline.
No. Yeah, I mean, hey, look, at least there's something interesting to talk about.
Yeah.
And you know, I would have been surprised if I'd seen the Phillies' name next to any Marcus Stroman dealings. So you know, it's certainly not the team I expected him to go to. But it's not like it's a deal that sets. You know, this isn't even like, oh, now this team is set up to make their run. No, it's like now the Mets have swallowed another player and added him to their amorphous blob of failures and off the field shenanigans. And God, I hope he doesn't get like dragged away by a pack of stray dogs on his way to Citi Field. But like, that's the kind of fate that now awaits poor Marcus Stroman. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, do the Phillies go after Noah Syndergaard? No. So
yeah,
What else you got?
Yeah. No, I mean, and that's the case here. You know, that's the thing is, like, where does this leave the Phillies? I think Syndergaard to the Padres. If Syndergaard gets traded, it sounds like it's the Padres because they have some really high-end prospects that the Mets really like, and they want to replenish their farm system a bit. But I don't think you can compete in 2020 if you're the Mets with Syndergaard and Wheeler both gone. And I know Wheeler's a free agent at the end of the year. They're not re-signing him. So I think he has to get traded. I don't think Syndergaard has to get traded here, but it sounds like a deal is really revving up. If you look on Syndergaard's Twitter feed, he says, current New York Mets pitcher for now. he's basically anticipating that he is going to get traded, and I would be surprised if it doesn't happen. So, again, where do the Phillies fit in on all of this? Well, I was reading a Ken Rosenthal Athletic piece today, a total trade rundown, and I did sometimes when I read these things, I do a control F and I type Phillies just to kind of skim down to where the Phillies are mentioned, and not a mention, not a word in this 2,000-word piece from Ken Rosenthal about the Phillies. And it really makes me wonder, we haven't really dug into the series yet against the Braves, Justin. We're going to do that in a few minutes, but
that's kind of why I was
why you were late.
The front end.
Yeah,
I thought
this was our version of the opener. Justin's going to take over for me now as host, and I'm going to just skip on for the rest of the night.
The people will love it as much as they love the opener.
Yeah, exactly. but yeah, that's the thing. It's like, did the Phillies show enough this weekend, Justin, to change your mind on what it is they should be going after? Because I really do think they shouldn't be going after guys for just this year, but a guy like Marcus Stroman for 2020, they should be in the ballgame for that. And if the prices are what the Blue Jays got from the Mets for Stroman, the Phillies should be in on that price tag.
Yeah, they just willingly did not want to do that. I mean, there's the chance exists that the Blue Jays just saw something in what they could get from the Mets that they, for whatever reason, loved more than anything the Phillies could have offered them. But if you're talking about talent level, yeah, the Phillies could have matched that deal probably. So, it's a little concerning. But my initial response to you saying, did the Phillies show you anything this weekend, was what the hell kind of question is that? Because, John, what the hell kind of question is that? There's not a lot the Phillies showed us this weekend that's different than what the Phillies have been showing us of late. You can beat teams like the Tigers, the Mets, the Pirates. But if you can't beat, they even split a series with the Dodgers, which, I'm sure a lot of Phillies front office people would hang their hat on that at the moment. But you know, at the same time, they're not going to use that as evidence that they should be huge buyers at the trade deadline. What the Phillies showed us this weekend is nothing that we haven't seen before against the Braves specifically. I don't know if you went down that absolute horror show of notes you sent over before this
not
podcast.
We were saving that for a second. Yeah.
but that was pretty much all the evidence. And if someone in the Phillies front office is reading those same numbers, then their eyes are bulging out of their heads about the same as ours, because there's nothing you saw this weekend that indicated that indicated this team was worth it. I mean, we're looking at this as fans, and there's a level of like, I'm going to say, trust that goes into this. Like, when you make a deal like that, you're trusting the team to acquiesce to that deal, to sort of absorb that deal in the way that benefits them that you envisioned. And you just don't trust this team to do that. And I think I've been rephrasing this in different ways for weeks, but I can't believe that it's still true. This team is still on the cusp of a playoff spot, and the one thing it needs is the one thing it's proven time and time again that it's unable to do, and that's win a bunch of games in a row. And this team correct me if I'm wrong, they haven't faced the Braves for the last time this season.
No, they play in September, yeah.
They haven't finished playing competitive teams. It's not just the Tigers and Pirates all the way out here. So everything that's wrong with this team that's impossible to hit because feels like it's a moving target still exists. Nothing's been solved. Drew Smyly's made one start, right?
Yeah,
and he's got
he's the only non-Aaron Nola pitcher this month to have a quality start.
And he's the acquisition they've made. I don't doubt they're gonna make. Oh no, they Jose Perella.
Yeah, Perella. Yeah.
Mike someone.
Yes, Mike someone.
Mike someone. Yeah. We'll never forget where we were.
Oh yeah, Morin. Yeah. So this is the level the Phillies are operating on this year. Look. This is a team that should be better. They're not. And no, they're not out of time. They're not completely out of time mathematically. They're not out of time calendar-wise. But look at them out there. Look at that team. Look at that team losing 15-1 at home in their own park to a team that is supposed to be at least, you know, a rival. They're supposed to at least rival the Braves.
Yeah.
But they're untouchable. They're so far apart at this point that it's laughable.
Wow.
And maybe they get a wild card spot, but catching the Braves in the division seems out of the question. So if that's affecting your decision making as far as acquiring more talent or giving up minor league talent, I hate to be on the front office's side on this, but it's just like, what have you seen that makes you think, yeah, this team's worth it? They're not.
Yeah.
They haven't showed you anything. They're not.
Let's get into the Braves a little bit more here coming up after the break. But before we hit it, I just wanted to see if you guys had seen the Trevor Bauer toss into center field. Did you guys see that video yet?
Oh, sure, you mean the angry baby man throwing his tantrum at the mound?
Yeah.
He's the worst in every way. Trevor.
If you want some indication as to why there are people who don't like Trevor Bauer and don't think he'd be a good fit on this team, it's because he lost his mind when he chucked a ball over the center field fence today as Terry Francona came out to remove him from a game, in which he was getting, you know, he gave up a bunch of runs. A lot of it was bad luck. He was frustrated. That's fine. But this is the kind of guy you're dealing with. And you just don't. Terry Francona, when he was pulling him out of the game, said, "What the F is wrong with you?" It's like, you just don't. I mean, we've got enough problems here. We don't need a head case on this team as well. I don't care how well he pitches. So,
what's really interesting is that Trevor Bauer does something like that, and he gets treated like he's an angry little boy, and that's almost like precocious or fun. The announcers afterwards referred to him sitting on the bench as him being in the principal's office. You know, he's a troublemaking rapscallion, not somebody who, like, you just wouldn't. Why would you, if you were putting a team together, why would you look at him in general, with today just being the latest thing, which, by the way, is a pretty low-scale Trevor Bauer episode compared to some of the other stuff he's done. But, like, why would you look at that and think, yes, that guy's worth it. That guy's worth giving up assets for. That guy's worth putting in our locker room with other guys who may or may not want to play with him. It can't be that appealing.
No. I can't imagine that everybody loves pitching with Trevor Bauer. But I don't think that's going to happen. It's not a realistic trade target for the Phillies anyway. So I just thought it was, you know, it's one of the names that are being mentioned, and it's some fun video. Go on my timeline at John Stolness if you want to see it, if you haven't already. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about this Brave series with the Phillies. Talk about the two rebuilds, how they've kind of moved in divergent directions, and you know, kind of get into some of these games just a little bit. You know, we don't want to get, you know, our hands too dirty in it because it was pretty awful this weekend. But we'll do that next right here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So there's a reason I decided to hold this off as the second story on the podcast, because I didn't want to come on here talking about this awful series first. Frankly, the New York Mets were far more interesting than the Philadelphia Phillies this weekend with getting Marcus Stroman and all that. But let's talk about this Brave series, because it truly was awful. The Phillies did manage to salvage the final game of the series, beating up on the Braves here on Sunday. The Phillies hit a bunch of home runs in this game, 4 home runs at Citizens Bank Park today. They are now 17-4 at home this year when they hit multiple home runs. And this is also the first time this year that Bryce Harper, Rhys Hoskins, and JT Realmuto have all hit home runs in the same game, which is pretty cool. But it's interesting. They're 17-4 at home when they hit multiple homers, but they've only hit more than one homer in a home game, 21 out of their 54 games, far less than half, which is just insane when you think about the juice ball and the park that they play in. Overall, the Phillies are 27-7 when they hit more than one homer in a game. Of course, they're 11th in the National League in homers and 12th in slugging percentage. And so when you're looking back at this series, you were mentioned, Justin, a second ago, the litany of horrible numbers. Here they are. Jason Stark tweeted out that the Braves going into today's game were averaging 7.73 runs a game versus the Phillies this year. And if you don't include any of the Coors Field numbers, that's the most of any team versus any opponent with a minimum of 9 games played. And if you take out the first series of the year when the Phillies swept the Braves, it would have been 9.25 runs per game the Braves were averaging against the Phillies. But that's before today, of course. Before Sunday, the Phillies owned a 7.06 ERA in 11 games against the Braves this year. That's including Aaron Nola's 2.95 ERA against them.
These are stats you can feel, by the way. Yeah, even if you don't know them, like if you don't know the specific numbers, you've felt these stats if you've watched these teams play each other this year.
In all 6 games the Braves have won against the Phillies this year, they've scored at least 9 runs. They've won 9-8, 15-1, 9-2, 12-6, 9-2, and 15-7. That's an average margin of victory of 7 runs. There's more. I'm not, you know what, I have all these listed here. I don't have it in me to read all these. But, you know, as we read these numbers, Liz, we see that you could just see it with your eyes too, the difference between these two teams. The Phillies went about over this past week. They had a couple off days, and they were able to set up their rotation exactly the way they wanted it for the Atlanta Braves. And this is what Gabe Kapler's options were: to set up the rotation so that Captain Bonespur is pitching the first game of the series. A guy with bone spurs in his elbow is the guy you have is the first pitcher out of the gate against the Atlanta Braves. And then Zach Eflin, who had an ERA of 9.38 in his previous 5 starts, they made sure they wanted him in place to start the second game of this series, with Aaron Nola getting the third game. That tells you all you need to know about where this team is right now. That's the best they could do. A guy with bone spurs in his pitching elbow, Liz, and a guy with a 9.38 ERA in his previous 5 starts, that's the best they could come up with.
I'm sorry, I don't believe I've ever heard of Zach Eflin. I have no knowledge of this pitcher at all. Nothing Eflin's I've ever ERA said now. About him ever makes any sense.
Oh, man, I wish I hadn't. I thought I was going to be wrong about him this year because he got off to such a great start. 2.81 ERA.
I wouldn't shut up about him. 12. I talked about him so much. And
I ate some crow. I thought I was wrong.
No, there's no eating crow, because we've said this now. We're going to say it again, and we're going to continue to make this mistake even after I say this. We have to never do this again. We are never allowed to believe in anyone for any reason, at least not guys who have given us 8,000 different reasons not to believe in them. I laugh every time, and I'm like, no, we're both saying, again, this is the year for Zach Eflin and Nick Pivetta. That will be what we look back on at the end of this year, at the end of this season, which is coming up so close. That's what we'll look back on and be like, that's like, for me, the biggest imprint this season has left on me, is that it's time to let go. It's the death of hope for these guys that we keep wishing and hoping will work out well. You know, yeah. This team hasn't showed us anything. They have no choice but to pitch, you know, poor Bonespur McGee. Yeah. They have no choice but to send, you know, Zach Eflin out there again and make him wear it. You know, that's what they have. And if that is the best they can do, there's nothing they can get at the trade deadline that's going to help them. Nor should they.
But they did have a choice. Well, someone had a choice about putting Cole Irvin in the game.
Yeah, we're going to get to that, man.
That wasn't a no choice
No,
situation.
It was not.
I think that the Phillies look at Jake Arrieta and they still see Jake Arrieta, the guy they acquired, or the guy they thought they were acquiring. I think they still trot him out there. And again, I guess part of it's out of necessity, but they still trot him out there like he's a valuable piece, like he's some kind of stopper, like he's some kind of asset. Like, we rearranged the rotation so that Arrieta would have to pitch in this important game. Why? Why announce that he has bone spurs and then announce that he's going to keep pitching through it? We're all going to be thinking about it every time he goes out there and assume that it's affecting something, because 4 clean innings followed by a disastrous 5th isn't a good start, even if you bother to mention the 4 good innings. So they still count runs when they happen after you've pitched well. So, yeah, it's entered sort of a hopeless scenario. Yeah, I agree with that. They're not going to do anything. What they could do probably wouldn't help, and what they have isn't working. So what's...
Yeah,
what's,
that's not a lot
left.
Of options. Yeah, well, and maybe that's why Gabe Kapler essentially gave up on Friday. He gave up on that game. They were down. The Phillies were down 5-1, and the Phillies had just blown a great chance to get back in the game when Realmuto grounded out to second with the bases loaded and the 5th. And hey, Realmuto got the grand slam to really put the game away here for the Phillies on Sunday, and so that great job by him on
Kinda.
Sunday. But you know,
it
got close again.
6-0 to 6-4
pretty quick.
6-4,
but then you know Hoskins got it lengthened the lead a little bit. So you're right, but I mean, turning a 2-0 game into a 6-0 game, that was a big blow at the time. But obviously, that ground out to second with the bases loaded to end the 5th, with them being down 5-1, was kind of a big blow. And Jake Arrieta comes out of the game. Now, the Phillies had two off days that week. The bullpen was fully rested. Kapler had his pick of anyone else in the bullpen. Instead, like you mentioned, Justin, he goes to Cole Irvin, who I think we all agree at this point is the worst pitcher, the worst guy to bring out of that bullpen. Number one, because he's not a reliever. Also, he's just not a good major league pitcher, whether he's starting or relieving. He's basically the 13th pitcher on this roster out of 13. And it's a four-run game at home. And I know the Phillies offense with a four-run deficit is probably not winning that game. But why? I mean, this is the you have lined your team up. You have lined things up so that you are telling everyone, we think this series is really important. Obviously, this is a team. If we sweep this team, we've got a little momentum coming out of Detroit. We heard Gabe Kapler talking about they have a little momentum coming out of Detroit. The Braves had just gotten swept in two games by the Kansas City Royals. Maybe we're catching them at the right time. Maybe we can get back to 2.5 behind the Braves if we sweep them here. And instead, your first two pitchers out of the gate is a guy with bone spurs in his elbow and Cole Irvin, who is essentially your worst pitcher. And when Irvin allowed the first two hitters, who were both left-handers, to get on, no one was warming up in the pen. Kapler had decided right then and there that he was more concerned about having Irvin give him multiple innings to save the bullpen than trying to stay in the game. And of course, Irvin imploded. And then the next night in the game when they were down 15-1, they used Ranger Suarez and Jose Alvarez and Juan Nicasio and Adam Morgan and Hector Neris. They decided to use all of their better relief pitchers in that game, the game they're down by two touchdowns. I just think, Justin, the team's ability to make in-game changes, in-season changes, with Matt Klentak not being able to make trades on the fly, and Gabe Kapler, his mystifying use of the bullpen here, it seemed like they gave up on that game on Friday night way earlier than they should have.
Absolutely. I mean, it's tough to really – I hate to make an assumption like that because you're just like, am I really seeing what I think I'm seeing here? But it's tough to argue against. Like, bringing in Cole Irvin is not – well, yeah, it is kind of like a human white flag situation. And that game was not out of reach. But, like, you get the sense that Gabe Kapler's looking at percentage chances of whether a team's going to pull through or not based on who's out there. And, you know, he sees a number that's the wrong number, and he goes with Cole Irvin because he's like, whatever, the game's lost anyway. I mean, that's kind of tough to swallow because, you take enough crap as a fan if you're, like, giving up on a team early. But when it looks like the team itself is doing that and not being particularly subtle about it, it's really demoralizing,
yeah,
in a devastating way. Like, makes you wonder, like, why should we even bother? You know, like, if you're not going to bother, why should we? And that's the sense you got from that game. And, you know, yeah, they came out and won and won the third game, but aren't you sick of hearing that the Phillies salvaged a series by picking up the third game? I mean, at the end of the day, they're still losing ground in the division to the Braves by losing that series. So, yeah, I don't like the Phillies' chances against the Braves right now as much better than anybody. But, like, that was rough. That was a rough game. And you didn't feel – you wanted to leave this series at least feeling better about the Phillies, at least feeling better about their chances to make the playoffs or even just to play the Braves. And after that game, I felt worse. I don't know about you guys, but I definitely felt worse.
Liz, how about you? Did they give up on the game, and did you feel worse afterwards?
It made me not watch any more Phillies this weekend. I won't lie. Like, it really was demoralizing. What Justin said is totally right. I was so disappointed. Not that I really thought that they could win, but shouldn't they at least appear to try? Because you don't send him out in a competitive game. You send Cole Irvin, the guy that no one remembers, the guy who, he's not a reliever, but he's not a starter, clearly. Why do you send him out then if you're not ready to give up? Did the Phillies have an off day before that?
Yes. Yes, they had an off day. They had an off day on Thursday, and they had an off day on Monday this week. They had two off days this week.
And 5-1 is by no means out of reach,
especially
for an offense that's supposed to be this. The Orioles just set a record for the most multiple home, like, what, they hit 10 straight games with multiple home runs.
Yeah.
The Orioles, they had 34 wins when they sent that record. If that team can summon that much offense, a team with Bryce Harper, JT Realmuto, Rhys Hoskins hitting 3-4-5, not to mention any of these other guys, should be able to at least be competitive in a four-run game. There's no reason to bring in your white flag at that point.
No, and I didn't watch another second of the Phillies this weekend. I'm like, you know what? If this is what they're showing me, I've got better things to do with my time, which is true.
Yeah, clearly they did too, apparently.
Yeah, no.
Like, if they're not going to bother to try, why am I going to bother to watch the games? Why should I take time out of my life to do that? If I'm not, I'm not paying that much money for MLB TV to watch Cole Irvin in a 5-1 game.
No, there was no excuse for having him in that baseball game. Cole Irvin at this point he's a break glass in case of emergency pitcher. This is a guy who you're in the 13th inning and you realize this could go on for a while. I need somebody who can give me 3 or 4 innings. But, you know, you've gotten Zach Eflin, a guy with a heavy body. You've got in Jake Arrieta with the bone spurs. I mean, it's just comical. This is comical. And I know I feel like I'm being overly negative because they did win on Sunday and they are just one game back of the wild card. But I think what's really distressing is that, you know, you see how these two teams, they both started their rebuild in 2015, right? I mean, you had the Braves start their rebuild going into the season. That's when they traded Craig Kimbrell, and I believe it's when they traded Jason Hayward at that point. And Justin Upton got traded, and the Phillies began theirs at the midpoint in 2015 with the Cole Hamels deal. And so, but they both kind of started on the same path. Now, there's a difference. The Braves were dealing from a really strong core of young players, and it was kind of mind-boggling when they were doing it. But Craig Kimbrell in his prime was an elite talent. Jason Hayward.
And the Phillies were herding a group of stray cats that had gathered outside the stadium.
Precisely. Right. Cole Hamels was obviously a great chip to have, but the rest of the pieces that they were trying to sell were nothing close to that. And so you can understand why maybe the Braves might be a little bit ahead of the Phillies right now. But when we came into this season, we didn't think the Braves were going to be this much better than the Phillies. And, you know, we oversold the Phillies' talent level, but, you know, I thought for sure that this core that the Phillies had put together during the offseason, they didn't get depth this offseason, but the core that they put together would be able to keep pace. But the difference between these two teams is staggering.
It's huge. You know, every rebuild is, every team likes to pretend that they know what they're doing. No one knows what they're doing. The Braves got really lucky. The Braves got lucky with Acuna and Ozzie Albies, that's right. And let's not forget that their former GM has been banned for life for things that the Braves did in acquiring international talent. They also paid a pathetically small price for it. And on top of that, they started a rebuild when they really didn't have to. They really didn't have to. Teams do that rebuild thing. There's a piece to be written somewhere looking at this, you know, in 5 years, looking at the cycles of when teams choose to do this and whether or not they really have to. Where the Phillies were, they kind of had to.
Yeah.
They had players who were way over the hill. You know, no one was getting any better. Cole Hamels was older. You know, he didn't have a ton of good years left. He had a huge contract. You know, the Phillies sort of had no choice but to blow it up and start over. The Braves had other things they could do. They've kept Freddie Freeman.
Yeah, they did.
Freddie Freeman was not something that they got rid of. And if you're able to keep one piece or two pieces, you can at least rethink your rebuild a little bit. The Braves didn't have to do that. And so they started absolutely from a position of strength. It's just frustrating to see, knowing that they did some things that were not allowed, knowing that they signed Ronald Acuna to that contract that makes me angry still. I mean, it was, you know, it wasn't all that much long ago, but it was it's a pathetically small amount of money for a player with that much talent. And so they're just, you know, some teams get lucky and some teams are the Phillies.
Well, I mean, I guess here's where we are, Justin. I mean, I wonder, too, if the Phillies maybe are just a year behind, but, you know, if they – Spencer Howard put an incredible performance in his double-A debut this week. I think he had 10 strikeouts in his first ever start and struck out the side in his first inning there. Alec Bohm looks like he could be – this team's starting third baseman next year. You know, who knows? Adam Haseley hit his third home run of the season. Another one to dead center field. You know, if he's going to be a 20 to 25 home run guy, he looks like he has that kind of power. Maybe you've got another piece on your hand here. You know, it's possible that maybe the Phillies are just like a year behind and some of these guys come up maybe 2 years behind. But, you know, some of these guys come up and they start to filter in here. Maybe that helps them catch Atlanta a little bit here in terms of the talent level. But that's kind of how it's going to have to be, because there's not a whole lot more superstars that this team can afford to go out and buy at this point in order to catch up. You've gone out and spent the money and made the trades you're going to make to kind of have your established core in place, I think.
And how many more do they need? For God's sake,
why aren't the
ones they have now working out? I mean, I think we're all a little surprised by that, and I think that's a factor in this. I would say as well that the Braves started a little higher up on the ladder than the Phillies this season, but I think everybody expected more from Bryce Harper, and you certainly expected more from Real Muto. You certainly expected better from Segura, from Hoskins, from all these guys. There's nobody who really jumped ahead or just performed as you would expect or performed for what they were acquired to perform as. Meanwhile, the Braves have all these great young players who are just amazing, and Freddie Freeman is just, I've been jealous that they've held on to him for as long as they have, but they're getting more out of Josh Donaldson than anybody would have guessed. I mean, that's what they grabbed him pretty quickly off the market, I believe. And I don't think anyone saw him. You know, he's hitting 300 over the last 2 weeks. You know, he's not setting the world on fire, but he'll put together some productive bursts for them. And when your guys like that start performing, then you know the rest of your team with your Albies and your Acuñas and your Freemans on it, you're going to be in a pretty good spot. I mean, how much of a mirage do you think the Braves pitching staff is? Like, there's a bunch of guys there that I remember when the Phillies were facing them, it's like, oh, this is this guy's first start since being at AAA for 3 months or something, and yet somehow it seems like they've got five weaponized starting pitchers in the rotation as well. I don't know how flimsy that actually is, especially after picking up Dallas Keuchel, who didn't have a job for most of the season. But yeah, I there's luck that goes into all of these construction projects. And the difference, I think, was that the Braves were rebuilding, the Phillies were rebuying, and they wound up having to comprise a lot more loose parts, by which I mean they're just acquiring a bunch of guys and putting them in the same clubhouse. Well, the Braves are, they're bringing up the next generation of Braves. So I think there's a difference there as well, just culturally. And I think when you get into what the difference is between the 2019 and 2018 Phillies, I think some of the common threads are probably more cultural than certainly they are who's on the team, because they had such a big turnover there. So I think all these things play a factor, and it shouldn't be as surprising that the Braves are well, it sucks that it's so surprising.
I know
that the Braves are so much better, I guess.
Yeah. Real quick, let me ask you guys a quick question. Spencer Howard, right now, if he were promoted to the big leagues, is he the second best starter in the rotation?
He's someone that we haven't seen at all.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I think he is too. I don't think that doesn't mean it's the right thing to do to call him up, but I do think he probably would be the second best starter.
I've lost all qualifiers. I've lost all insulation. I've lost all but what ifs with this rotation. It's Aaron Nola and four empty slots for me right now.
Well, up next, we're going to talk a little bit about the core, the coaching, and I want to dive in a little bit more about Matt Klentak here and his ability to judge talent. We'll get into that next right here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So to finish things up here, there's some questions I think we should ask about the Phillies here, as we are just a couple of days away from the trade deadline. And certainly they are asking themselves this question too, as they try to figure out exactly what direction they want to go here. I think the big question that we have is whether or not this is the core, or the problem is the core or the coaching. I mean, on Twitter, I get so many tweets whenever anything goes wrong, and this core sucks. You know, these players are terrible. The Phillies misjudged on Real Muto. They misjudged on Segura, and it's true. Segura and Real Muto are having down seasons this year. There's no doubt about it. But I think we have to wonder, like, is it the players? Like, is it the core of this team? Is Segura and Real Muto, are they just lousy this year, or playing below their career norms for no apparent reason other than they're just playing lousy? The fact that, they didn't have any of the young outfielders that they expected to make up a part of the bench perform the way they wanted to, and the starting rotation, the way it's faltered the way it has, is it because of the players, or is it because of the coaching? Because when I look at a guy like Nick Pivetta, I see a guy with great stuff. All the talent in the world. Same thing with Velasquez. And the Phillies haven't been able to get out of them what they were hoping to get out of them. Same thing with some of the young guys. Now, Scott Kingery and Rhys Hoskins are a couple of young guys who are doing well for the Phillies, and maybe Haseley joins them on that front. But Roman Quinn has looked absolutely awful since being promoted to the big leagues. Aaron Altair, obviously. Nick Williams has been brutal. Some of these guys we knew had flaws to begin with, but they also haven't exactly been getting coached up to be better players. So, and you look at some of the guys that have left. J.P. Crawford is playing okay for Seattle. He's had a little bit of a down streak lately offensively, but his overall numbers are pretty solid. Carlos Santana is hitting .282 with a .405 on-base percentage and a .518 slugging percentage, 21 home runs with Cleveland. You know, some of the guys who have left are playing better.
Oh my God.
You know, is it possible? What do you guys think? Justin, what is your guess? Is it the core of this team? Is it the players? Some of them having a down year, or some of them being worse than anybody thought? Or is it the fact that this team can't coach people up?
You know, I really loved that this team's thing early on was the Fortnite wave. It was the reference to something that was off the field issue that they knew everybody knew about, that came out after the fact, that fed into team chemistry, that fed into, you know, maybe why this team didn't look cohesive or certainly not focused for the back half of 2018. You know, it was cool. It was a cool way to kind of throw that narrative and then, like, own that narrative and use it to their advantage with a new crop of guys. But I feel like we're on track for kind of the same scenario here, that the season's going to end and we're going to find out a whole bunch or maybe just a couple of new things that explain why so many great players, so many elite-level players were unable to play at even an average level for long periods of time. Because I don't believe for a second that Gene Segura, JT Realmuto, Bryce Harper, they all got here and suddenly forgot how to play baseball, which is why I got to go back to these common threads. Like, yeah, you still got Hoskins, Hernandez, Franco, you know, you still got some of the same players, but they certainly looked re-energized hanging out with on a roster with the new faces the Phillies added. So it does make you wonder about the other common thread, which is culture, which is the front office, which is, you know, the clubhouse. Like, what's going on in there? We never know anything. And it's not, you know, I don't expect the Phillies to tell us anything. If I was running a clubhouse, my first instinct would be like, we don't have to tell anybody.
Yeah, it stays in here. Yeah.
Yeah, it's in here. It will drive everybody nuts. It'll be hilarious. Let's just do it. But being on the outside of that, it's just like, we can only guess. And at this point, I'm willing to guess that, yeah, once the season's over, there's going to be a couple of narratives that come out explaining just exactly what the hell's going on in there and if it was a problem, which it seems like it must be. So yeah, I do blame right now this more on cultural, it has to be a more cultural problem, because I refuse to believe players that have been so good and were acquired, and like, we like the trades and deals that acquired them because they are great players.
Yeah.
They've just been unable to be the great players they were acquired to be. So that's why I come down on, it's got to be something cultural. It's got to be something, because there's no way they can all just be slumping at the same time for as long as they've been down.
Yeah, Liz, I think that's a good point. And, you know, it's a lot easier also to change the coaching and see if that has an effect on the players rather than swap out all the personnel. Because if you're talking about swapping out all the players that you have, you just...
Well, you can't.
You can't do that. So that's,
one of them's going to be here for a long time.
That's right. So I mean, I guess that's a question here too, is, you know, is do you think, you know, changing the coaching, does that give us more answers, or does that not really change? Is that just window dressing?
I don't think it would hurt.
Yeah.
Changing out everybody. Driveline has their hooks in this organization like you wouldn't believe. And I think that, I mean, you can point to whatever you want. Whatever is happening on the Phillies right now is not working.
Mm-hmm. And
Driveline, you have to hang that on. I mean, Justin, you called it, you know, you're talking about clubhouse culture. I'm looking at analytics culture.
Mm-hmm.
Who are they hiring? Why are they hiring them? Are they just hiring guys who they, you know, are they hiring anybody with a baseball background? Are they just hiring people who can, you know, spout out ideas and who have a Silicon Valley background? Like, how are they approaching any of this? how far in are they with Driveline, and what is that doing to everybody?
Well, the Driveline's focusing on the minors, from what I understand. I thought that they were dealing with major league stuff too, but a couple people told me that Jason Ochart and those guys are really kind of focusing mostly on the minor league. So
that still doesn't make me feel
good. It doesn't make me feel good either. But John Maley is the guy we're talking about when we're talking about why the major leaguers are having issues.
Send him to the moon at this point. Send everyone off. Send Kapler off too. I'm kind of done at this point. They've got the players that they need. They've got the guys. I don't think we were crazy when we said that this team has a lot of potential, that they acquired good guys and put together a good team. They have. We know what this team could do. They're just not doing it, and they're not doing it consistently. Mm-hmm. It's not like it's, you know, fits and spurts. This is a team that consistently cannot get started.
Offensively,
and you have to look as deep as you have to look all the way down to where it's coming from. How are they instructing everybody? Like, if there are issues with, if anybody has an issue with how they've acquired their players, that's, you know, definitely an area you have to look at. You know, what are the stats that they're using? You know, for that, like, what is their internal stuff like? Stuff we're never going to know. We're always just going to ask, hey, what's this about? Mm-hmm. You know, we're never actually going to know any of it.
Yeah.
But my issue is that these are guys who all should be performing, and they're not performing, and they're not performing as a group. That is a failure of instruction.
Yeah. No, the fact that it's as a group that, you know, they're having all these kinds of issues, I think, is something to really take a look at. And, you know, the other thing I think we need to take a look at is a very simple question. That is, can the general manager judge talent? Can Matt Klentak judge talent? Let's take a look at this. Why is Cole Irvin even on the team at this point? There has to be, you know, it makes no sense that I know they're shorthanded, but there's got to be other options out there. He thought that Pivetta, Velasquez, and Eflin would be a workable 3-4-5. That has absolutely not turned out to be the case. He did, and we implore, and I know I was leading the charge to sign Jake Arrieta to a 3-year deal, and that obviously has not worked. He signed a ton of veteran relievers, none of whom have worked out. Most of them have gotten injured. His trade deadline moves last year all blew up in his face as he tried to get reinforcements. Segura and Real Muto trades do not look great right now. The Ken Giles trade yielded them virtually nothing, and they have yet to unearth a secondary piece to make them better. Maybe Drew Smyly's that guy, but they have not been able to get somebody like that. These are all, I mean, anybody can go out and sign a guy for, you know, when you throw $330 million at him. And I know that's easier said than done because none of us were sure they were going to get Bryce Harper. But it doesn't take a genius to say Bryce Harper is probably really good. We should probably pay him a lot of money. You know what I mean? Those type of moves don't, you know, are kind of no-brainers. But these kinds of in-season moves, I wonder if Matt Klentak has the flexibility and the ability to judge talent and to know what to do when the plan goes awry, Justin.
Yeah, I definitely don't think that he's expecting things to go wrong. And at this point, my assumption with Matt Klentak is that he's trying to formulate the smartest guy in the room move, which is something that multiple GMs do now instead of making the big splash. Like, yeah, like you said, they signed Bryce Harper. But, like, it just seems like everyone needs to make something, you know, everyone's got to be the smartest guy in the room. And right now, there's not a ton of really sneaky intelligence things to do. I mean, already people are crediting the Mets with hijacking the market after getting Stroman and then waiting to deal the starting pitchers they do have. Like, that's what people want. And that's what you get the sense Matt Klentak wants, that he wants to make the move that nobody thought of. And yeah, how's he going to do that if he's just digging up the whole time, which feels like that's the situation we're in now. Don't forget Jay Bruce, John. Bruce was hitting 212 when he acquired him from the Mariners. Like,
yeah,
what's the idea here? Like, I at this point, it is totally fair to wonder. Again, I can't say that, like, I'm totally down on things like the Segura and Real Muto deals because I keep saying these are good players, and they are. But every time the Mariners tweet out a J.P. Crawford highlight, it does make you – it twists the knife a little bit.
Part of me dies a little bit.
Yeah, right. Right. No, and that's fair, Liz. I mean, it's true that, you know – and the Jay Bruce trade, I think, was fine for what it was. They never intended him to be a starting left fielder. They intended him to be a bench piece, and that's fine. But Again, that doesn't, you know, he's now hurt. I mean, and that was kind of one of the things with Jay Bruce that was a worry.
Yeah, I forgot he was on the team.
Can we really blame the GM for guys getting hurt, though? Like, I know they went out of their way to look for guys who had been healthy, but I do think that's something of a fool's errand because injuries aren't things you can really predict. And look who they got, McCutcheon, and look what happened to him. He suffered the most devastating injury of the Phillies season thus far. So I don't know if that's necessarily fair, but it, you know, at the same time, how has it happened to everyone?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I guess
it's hubris. You know, I waited for it to happen. Like the 2011 season, I waited for something terrible to happen to everyone, and as it turns out, it didn't happen until the playoffs. This year, we've been put out of our misery early. The Phillies have been punished for their hubris of, you know, by the powers that be, you know, for putting together a competent to outstanding, you know, the range of competent to outstanding lineup. They've been cursed by having everyone be injured or slumping. That's the only thing I can think of right now, that it's like the baseball gods laughing at us and waving their hands in our direction.
And those seasons happen. You know, those seasons happen where nothing goes your way. Everybody gets hurt. I mean, this could be one of those types of seasons. I mean, all the relief pitchers the Phillies have lost this year, and they've lost like 6 of their top 8 relief pitchers for the season. I mean, that just doesn't happen in a normal season. And, you know, I know that the best laid plans were to have those veteran relievers take a lot of those high leverage innings and use those young guys to kind of learn on the job and to also, you know, eat up some of those innings and cover up for a starting rotation that they knew might have some weaknesses to it, and then make a trade at the trade deadline. I know that was a big thing. It's like, well, we won't sign a starting pitcher here during the offseason, but, you know, we'll have the opportunity to add a starting pitcher at the trade deadline. Well, we're here now, and the Phillies, despite having a horrible weekend against the Atlanta Braves, are just one game out of the wild card. So last thing tonight, guys, and Liz, I'll ask you first. Should the Phillies trade for pitching help? And if so, how aggressive should they be?
They need someone. We can't have a replay of this weekend. We just can't. I don't know if people will survive it because it was really difficult. They need at least one pitcher who can do things like they're supposed to do. That guy might be Drew Smyly. They might already have him. I think they need to get someone. I don't think it should be even close to a marquee deal. I think it should be more lower-level dealing that is more in concert with how they've been playing. Like, regardless of where they are, you have to make decisions for this team based on how they've looked. And how they've looked is bad. Mm. So if you're going to go out and get some help, which you should, don't go hunting in the bargain bin. Like, it's not going to excite anybody, but I think we've all decided that Matt Klentak's goal is not to excite anybody.
Yeah, Justin, I think, you know, you probably answered this question a little bit earlier, but just to put a bow on it as a more direct way of saying it, should the Phillies trade for pitching help, and if so, how aggressive should they be?
We were just talking about how Spencer Howard would be the second best pitcher on the Phillies if he came up, and how Alec Bohm is very likely the Phillies' third baseman of the future. To correct this team's pitching right now, you'd have to make a dramatic enough move that would probably cost someone of that level. I feel like the Phillies are on the same wavelength right now, and I don't think the Phillies think they're going to the playoffs. So I don't think they want to make an aggressive move like that and will stay in the bargain bin so that they can say they did something, maybe. Apparently they're unafraid to look like they're giving up if Saturday's game was any indication. But ideally they would go sifting through the bargain bin to at least maintain appearances that, like, oh, yeah, no, we see that we're one game out of the wild card. But I really do. I think at this point they may have, behind closed doors, surrendered to the idea of, look, we got Bryce for 12 more years. Let's just cut our losses and think about what we can add for next year that makes sure that this doesn't happen again.
And I think that's fine. I certainly am not giving up a top prospect for a starting pitcher or a relief pitcher. I would be fine if they're in the Tanner Roark business.
For,
if they're
for
in the
relief pitcher.
I know. That's
sorry. Like, imagine giving up one of those guys for a relief pitcher.
No,
right now.
I don't mean one of those guys for a reliever. I just mean getting a relief pitcher or something like that. I'm more, you know, I'm fine with going out and getting like a Tanner Roark or Alex Wood or something like that. You know, just because you're right, they're not moving any of their top guys. Anybody that they get who would be considered something of a marquee move would be here for 2020 and beyond. But you know, I think at this point the Phillies, they probably do need to get something. But it's not going to be anything that anybody gets really excited about, and that's probably for the best, because as we saw this weekend, this Phillies team has a long way to go, and it might not happen here in 2019. But again, just one game out of the wild card despite it all. All right, any final thoughts from you guys tonight? Justin, Liz?
Liz, you were just saying that you've been waiting for an injury epidemic like this since 2011, and you made me think back to a quote from Jeff Francoeur from 2010 spring training that I think about a lot, actually, and it was when he said, "The Phillies have done great, I understand, but God, they have not had the injury bug. Not one guy has been out the last 2 years. Bless them. I'm not praying for them to be hurt. That's great. But you feel it's got to kick up sometime." And I remember reading that at the time being like, what the hell's wrong with you? First of all, saying that they've never had anybody out. Chase Utley was having hip problems as early as 2008 and missing time. Brad Lidge spent a ton of time on. I mean, it's not like the Phillies didn't have guys go on what was then the disabled list. Like, that's absurd. But, you know, that's just Jeff Francoeur. But just from the mojo sense, when he brought that up, I was just like, wow, he just brought that energy into the universe. He just scared that right up. And I'm not saying this is that exactly. It was almost 10 years ago at this point. But it's just that kind of sentiment. I think we were all thinking it, and he just said it out loud. Because we did have a gift. We had a gift of health for, like, a while with a lot of the players that were the key contributors. And right now, that gift has been yanked out of our hands.
Fair enough. Liz, any final thoughts from you?
I just want the Phillies to play better baseball this week. Please. That's all I want. Those are the only final thoughts I have, is that I like watching baseball, and I like watching the Phillies, theoretically. I'd like to be able to watch them again without feeling disgust and dismay. So can we not have another Cole Irvin incident?
I'd settle for no embarrassment. I felt embarrassed when they brought Cole Irvin in. That sucks.
You know,
so
I'm looking at the schedule for this week, and it's even more egregious that they put in Cole Irvin, because they have an off day on Monday as well. The Phillies don't play on Monday. It's like three off days in the span of 8 days, and they went with Cole Irvin first out of the gate on Friday. But the Phillies welcome the San Francisco Giants to Citizens Bank Park in a wild card battle. They're going to take on the San Francisco Giants for three games here at Citizens Bank Park, and then they host the White Sox for a weekend series. So this should not be a terribly tough week for a team with playoff aspirations. You'd think the Phillies would be able to win a fair number of these games, but you know
the Giants are going to clobber the Phillies.
Yes, I sure do indeed.
Thank you. I just want to make sure we're all on the same page here. Because there has never been a time where we have assumed that they are going to do well against the Giants and have it work out.
Absolutely not. No, you're 100% right. So expect the Phillies to lose 2 out of 3 to San Francisco.
Expect the worst, everyone.
Yeah, expect the worst. But no, this is, and you know, listen, just a few days left for the trade deadline, so we will see what Matt Klentak does, if anything. But we live in interesting times, friends, and we have an interesting baseball team. We'll see what happens here over the next 48 to 72 hours before we chat again on the next episode of Hittin' Season. And, folks, that'll do it for this episode of Hittin' Season, episode number 306. My thanks to Justin Clue and Liz Rocher. Again, you can follow Justin on Twitter at Justin_Clue, Liz Rocher at Liz Rocher. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you all next time right here on Hittin' Season.